and I have been friends for about 20 years. And our friendship really blossomed when we started sharing our programs with each other in Southern California. We spent every Friday night together. We had dinner, and then afterwards we went to a joint Al-Anon AA meeting, which was just wonderful. So I'm so happy she's agreed to share her recovery with us. And Zooming from Texas, although she is a native Californian, please welcome our speaker tonight, Kim B.
Kim, you've got the floor.
Okay, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, first, my name's Kim and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 11th, 2008. And I just want to start by saying it's an absolute privilege and an honor to be here with all of you. And while I know different things brought us all together in these wonderful programs, the thing that we share in common is the pain and desperation that comes with alcoholism, whether you're the alcoholic or you're someone who loves an alcoholic. And the power of relating that happens in these rooms is spiritual, it's miraculous, it saves lives. And that's why when Lisa asked if I would speak tonight, without hesitation, the answer was yes. And I love the reading at the beginning talking about service and how important that is and how essential that is to recovery. And so sharing my story tonight, I will tell all of you that I didn't create an outline. I don't have talking points. I'm sharing from my heart. I learned a long time ago that asking my higher power to work through me and just to be real is the best way to do this for me. So what I'll be talking about tonight is what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And it's just my story. So I wanna start with where I come from. And this, I promise you, this is not going to be, I was born on October 14th, 1967 and take you through my entire life. I do want to share a little bit about my childhood. I think it's important. I grew up in a middle-class family with two parents. My parents divorced when I was 8 years old. I was an excellent student, a very social kid, and I had a happy childhood. Now, every family has their things. And, you know, if I am to describe mine, I had a mom who demanded perfection and expected perfection. So I did learn very, very early two things. One was pleasing people, and pleasing the people who were most important to me, my mom and dad, kind of became everything. And then I attached that with the things that I did. So I learned very young that I was a human doing and not a human being. And some of you can probably relate to that. It took me a lot of years and a lot of pain to figure out that I didn't need to do things to be loved. But that was a lot of how I perceived myself and how I perceived the way that I would be loved. So that just gives you a little bit of an idea. My father is a functioning alcoholic. I don't remember feeling like I was impacted by alcoholism as a young child. My mom was a bit of a rager. So certainly I had some things to deal with, as we all did. And I don't believe any of that had anything to do with the fact that I'm an alcoholic. So when I was 15 years old, I took my first drink. And at that time, I was the president of the student body at my high school. I was a cheerleader, and really only because I wasn't good enough to be in athletics, which is really what I wanted to do. And so that was how I could get close to sports. And I was a straight A student. And I took my first drink at 15 years old. I was a sophomore in high school. And the very first time I drank until I blacked out. And I was miserably ill the next day. And I could not wait to do it again. Now, I have been in AA for a lot of years, and I know everyone's story is different. What I do know is that for me, my alcoholism started from the time I took my very first drink, and it never changed. And what that meant was, once I got that first drink into my body, my ability to make choices about what I would do, where I would go, when I would stop drinking, whether or not I would black out, was completely taken away from me with the very first drink. And it was that way from the first time I drank, and that never changed. Now, what did change was, at the beginning, it was just a lot of fun. Yeah, I didn't feel good. Sometimes I threw up, right? I ended up places that I didn't even know how I got there. I'd wake up in the morning. I drove under the influence all the time. And so, but it was still fun. No consequences yet. And then when I was 16 and a half, I got a brand new car, and I had it for about, I don't know, 7-8 hours. And I wrapped it around a telephone pole in a blackout and was rushed to the hospital, had stitches in my mouth. My bottom teeth came through my bottom lip. I broke my nose, was pretty badly injured. No one did a sobriety test. So I skated through that one. And that was the first time that there was a real consequence for my drinking. But because it didn't get attached or associated with my drinking, it was a very easy thing to move past. And I had very generous and wonderful grandparents who would not imagine in a million years that I had that accident because I was drunk and just got me another brand new car. And I share that with you because the lack of consequences for my drinking allowed me to keep drinking. And so I'm going to fast forward a little bit and to when I was 17 and a half. And at that point, the grades had slipped, right? That I had been missing class. And school was the first alarm bell for my parents. And they put me into a drug rehab. So I was 17 years old. This was in 1985. And that was a time when there were no limits on insurance coverage for rehabs. And so I spent 6.5 months in a rehabilitation center. And the thing that happened for me in that experience was that I was introduced to AA. I built a circle of friends. I made incredible connections. And AA became my social life. Other sober young people became my circle of friends. And I was often running in the program when I got out of rehab. And I stayed sober. I went to college. I went to graduate school. I got an amazing job. And I stayed sober for 13 years. So I stayed sober from 17 to 30. And that was, and I stayed very connected to the program of AA. So I stayed sober through college. It helped that I went to a very small private school, which I intentionally selected because I wanted to stay sober. I was working a really strong program. And my life got really, really, really good. Anything and everything that I could have wanted, an incredible job out of college, a college education, a network of friends, a really, really great life. I had an apartment. I was completely financially self-supporting, and my life was great. And at about 12 years sober, so I was 29 years old, living my best life, I stopped going to meetings and I started going out with people after work, and I went to bars and I was in bars and I was around alcohol. And for almost an entire year, I stayed sober, but I disconnected from the program. And when I was 30 years old, had no thought when I woke up that day about drinking, about picking up a drink. I was out at a bar with, it was Oktoberfest, and I was at a bar with 20 people, and they were passing around a beer stein, and everyone was drinking from the same beer stein. Clearly that probably will never happen again after the last 2 years that we've come through. But they were passing around this beer stein, and every time it came to me, they just passed it over me because everyone knew Kim doesn't drink. And about the 10th time that it found, without even a thought in my head about drinking, I reached for the stein and I took it and I drank from it. So 13 years of sobriety, almost 13 years of sobriety, gone. In the snap of a finger. And I got really drunk that night, and I blacked out that night, and I woke up the next day and I said, I was 17 years old when I got sober. Every young person drinks a lot. I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I can manage this and I'm gonna be okay. And that is a lie. In AA in AA, we say a lot that alcoholism is the disease that always tells you that you don't have it. And that is the insidious nature of this disease. And despite all of that AA and all of that recovery, disconnecting from the program, I gave myself permission to go give it another try. I am very, very fortunate, blessed. I don't know, I think about it as a lottery ticket to be here talking to you all tonight, because what I learned with that relapse, and I'm gonna talk about that a little bit more than anything else, because I need to never forget. So I learned in that relapse that those 13 years that I was not drinking, my disease was still progressing. Because what happened over the next decade, and I drank for another 10 years. So from age 30 to age 40. And look, as a young person, right? Yeah, I was sneaking the drinks. I was underage, right? I had a car accident. It was not a good situation. I went from a straight A student to having to finish high school and independent study. I mean, there were some consequences, but it was very, very different this next time around, because the next time around, I got married. I had a child. I had advanced in my career and I had a whole lot more to lose. And so for 10 years, I would not say I controlled it. I would say probably for 8 of those 10 years, I managed to hide it, to keep it under wraps, to show up at my job every day and do a good job. And as a side note, I will tell you that that was one of my kind of qualifiers that, well, I must not be an alcoholic because I've never missed a day of work. I've never drank during the workday. Now, I went to work hungover almost every day, but I protected that time. And so that was one of the things that I told myself, I'm good, I'm okay. The people around me were realizing more and more that I was not, because my behavior changed. I blacked out. I forgot things. My words were slurred, but I was drinking a lot in secret. And I thought that I was fooling the people around me. And I will tell you that people that loved me for a good period of time knew what was going on, but even they didn't raise it. They didn't confront it. They didn't put it on the table, because really more than anything else, they just wanted it to not be true. And so when my son was 4 years old, I was 40 years old, and I had been what I thought was successfully hiding my drinking. The last day that I drank, I poured some vodka into a water bottle. And I will tell you, I had wine bottles in the closet. I had water bottles in my car and in my gym bag that were filled with vodka. And that was where I ended up. I had alcohol stashed everywhere. I couldn't go to the grocery store without a water bottle full of vodka in my purse, in the cart, and literally going up the aisles, I was sipping that vodka. That was where my drinking took me. And on the last time I drank, on May 10th of 2008, I poured vodka into a water bottle like this, and I put a line with a Sharpie, and I poured the vodka up to that line, and I told myself, that's all. And it was 10 o'clock in the morning. I drank all day. I filled that bottle up several more times. I drove my child and 3 of his friends that lived next door in my car in a blackout all day long. It is still hard for me to talk about that. And I will tell you that I have one child, and that kid at that time, today, and every year in between was the absolute center of my universe. And for any of you who have children, I know I don't have to explain this, that the way you love your kid, the fierce way that you want to protect them is unmatched by any other kind of love. And still, I put his life in danger. And I put the lives of 3 other children in danger that day. I am not a bad person. I am an alcoholic. And my alcoholism propelled me into behaviors that are, in my mind, the most shameful. You know, there are lots of things that I can say are things to feel ashamed about. Putting your own child in danger and the children of people you love in danger, that for me says everything. my ability to make a choice about how much I drank once I swallowed that first sip was completely gone. And there's no better evidence of that than what I just shared with you. And so I got home at the end of the day, the next door neighbor kids went home. I went inside with my son and his father knew in an instant. Now his dad had known for a couple of years what was happening and was so upset and unable to deal with it that he just chose not to say anything. But that, when I walked in the door with our kid in that state, he took Brandon, and that's my son's name, and he said, "We are done." And he picked up that little boy and walked out the door and drove away. And so I was left inside my house with some level of realization of what had happened. But again, I had been drinking all day. And I had this moment, and this moment is described in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can share as part of my story that I lived this, which is I had this moment where I did not want to drink anymore. I did not want to drink anymore. And I did not want to be sober. And the level of fear and shame and why, how did I get here? I mean, this is a straight A student, a decent human being, a kind human being, and I'm here. And so I went into the bathroom and I got a bottle of Tylenol PMs and I took the entire bottle sitting there in the living room of my house by myself. And about 20 minutes later, and I have to believe that it was my higher power that said, "You know what, Kim, there's something more that you have to offer to this world," intervened, because I had this moment of clarity. And I thought, "Oh my God, what did I do? I do not want to die. I do not want to die." And so I called 911. And they came and got me and took me to the hospital and had me drink that charcoal. And it's all still very fuzzy, to try to get rid of both the medicine and the alcohol in my system. And my blood alcohol level was 0.28. And I should have died that night, but I didn't. And they put me on a 5150 hold in the hospital. So they took me up to the sixth floor once they knew medically that I was going to be okay, because I had swallowed a bottle of pills. And I woke up the next morning and I looked in the mirror, and it was May 11th, 2008, which was also Mother's Day. So on Mother's Day, I was in a psych ward on a 5150 hold, looking in the mirror and wondering, how did I get here? And so I said a little prayer, like, whoever you are, wherever you are, I don't want my life to end like this. And then I had a thought, and I had this moment of realizing that, you know what? I'm not crazy. I'm not evil. I'm not bad. I'm an alcoholic. And I know where to go. I know where to go. And I know where to find my people. I know where to find the people who I can tell everything that got me to this moment. And they're going to put their arms around me and they're going to love me anyway. And so when the psychiatrist came in to see me, I said to her, I said, you know, I know what's wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic. I was in a blackout yesterday, but I've been sober before. I know where I need to go. I know that there is hope and I know there's recovery. So if you can just let me out, I'm going to go straight to a meeting and I'm going to find my people. And she said to me, you know, Kim, I actually believe you. And most of the time I talk to people in this situation and I know they're just BSing me, but I actually believe you. And you're going to stay here the full 72 hours and you're going to look around and you're going to remember that if you drink again, this is the best place you will end up. The best place. Because if you're not here, you're going to be in jail or you're going to be dead. So I want you to stay here for the 3 days and I want that to really sink in. And then when you leave here, I absolutely trust that you're going to go to an AA meeting. And I did. And that started the journey that has now been, interesting and enough, a 13-year journey. So I've been sober for 13 years. I'll be, God willing, we'll celebrate 14 years in May, which will be the longest I've been sober. And I feel like I've had two lives. I feel like I've had two lives. I've had a life of utter desperation and fear and shame and a really, really vicious cycle that was incredibly selfish and incredibly dishonest. And I can say this to all of you, at the end of the day, I am accountable for those actions. I will also tell you from my own experience, if you love an alcoholic, every day I wanted to do better. And for many, many days, I didn't. I don't remember my son's first four birthdays. We have a big party for him every year. Lisa can attest to this, a big, big party because we have one child. And so, you know, it's like the biggest holiday of the year. And those first four birthday parties, don't remember a thing about them. Every single birthday party since, I remember every single moment. And I started this path, and I will tell you this time around, when I was laying in that hospital bed before I went on that 5150 hold, I had my sister and my dad both telling me that they were disgusted with me, that they were angry with me, that they were ashamed of me. How could you? My son's father, like, if you know this is a problem, like, how could you drink and drive with our son in the car? And the only thing that I could say to them was, starting today, I'm going to do my best to do better. I'm not going to say I'm sorry. I'm not going to make any promises. I'm going to tell you that today I'm going to do my best to be better. And you know what? For people who aren't alcoholics, asking that question, like, how could you? Why would you? Why don't you stop? I absolutely understand those questions. And I also could only say that I didn't have the power to stop. So for 13 years or 13 and a half years, I have been on this journey. And I have lived through leaving a company that I loved and had been there for 27 years and started a new job. I lived through a divorce. And my son's father and I are wonderful friends. I have been a really amazing mom who has been able to show up, not perfectly by far every day, but I have showed up every single day. My son is going to graduate from high school this year and he's going to go to college. And I'm going to be able to send him off knowing that I could not have been a better mom to him. Again, not perfect, but I was present, 100% present from when he was 4 and a half until now. I'm a family member who people count on and trust. I'm a leader at work. And I don't mean by title, I mean, I show up at work and I practice the principles of this program every day in trying to be of service to others. I found a higher power, and I will tell you all that I wasn't a religious person. I would probably describe myself as agnostic. And I found a God of my understanding. I found an amazing power in AA, where sometimes when I couldn't really get my head around God, and it has been a journey for me. Sometimes it's the ocean. Sometimes it's the energy in the room and looking around at other alcoholics like me who came from a place of utter desperation and shame and have healthy, full, productive lives today. And that was my higher power. I made a move from Southern to Texas for my job. And I'm happy to say that this year I will be moving back, but I came here to a place I didn't want to be. And I made that work. I found a group of women in AA who are my sisters. And I have an incredible life today. And it is all because I do my best every day. And I, again, am far from perfect, but I do try every day to practice the principles of the program in every aspect of my life. I fall short sometimes, but that's where that step 10 comes in. And at the end of the day, at the end of every day, I do a little inventory. What could I have done better today? And I had a sponsor very early on that told me, Kim, you are so incredibly hard on yourself. When you do that inventory at the end of the day, I don't want you to just come up with the things that you could have done better. I also want you to come up with the things that you feel good about and reinforce those things. And so all these little practices, all of these principles, this design for living that I actually think would do, if everyone in the world was doing their best to practice the principles of our programs, I think the world would be a much better place. And so, look, my life carries the normal challenges that we have in life. I lost my mom at the beginning of February, and it would be oversimplified to say we had a complicated relationship, but you know what? In the last part of her life, I was a daughter that I could be proud of. I was able to accept her for who she was and accept the fact that she did the best that she could. And I was a good daughter to her. And so I lost her unexpectedly on February 4th with no regrets. That's a gift of this program. So I know I'm trying to be very sensitive to time because I really want to hear our Al-Anon speaker, but I thought I would close tonight with something from the big book of AA that when I read that book cover to cover, I read all the stories in the big book. And there was the end to one of the stories, which is called The Keys of the Kingdom. And it's on pages 268 to 276 in the fourth edition of the big book. And it's about a woman alcoholic who tells her story, a woman who had every reason to have a very successful, good life, who talks at the beginning of the story. And she says, I found myself being helplessly propelled towards total destruction. And that so aptly describes where my alcoholism took me. But this is the last part of that story, and I thought I would close with this. The last 15 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I've had my share of problems, heartaches, and disappointments, because that is life. But also I have known a great deal of joy and a peace that is the handmaiden of an inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends and, with my AA friends, an unusual quality of fellowship. For to these people, I am truly related. First through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and newfound faith and hope. And as the years go by, working together, sharing our experiences with one another, and also sharing a mutual trust, understanding, and love without strings, without obligation, we acquire relationships that are unique and priceless. There is no more aloneness with that awful ache so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. That ache is gone and never need return again. Now there is a sense of belonging, of being wanted and needed and loved. In return for a bottle and a hangover, we have been given the keys of the kingdom. Thank you very much for inviting me tonight and for your attention.